Theater of the Mind.
Fear is a favorite topic of mine, as is the case, I'm sure, with most, if not all of you. As haunters, of course, we deal in simulated fear, as we're not in this crazy game to actually hurt anyone, and all the terror, horror, and panic experienced by the audience are really just live-action manifestations of that age-old contract between author and reader, the willing suspension of disbelief. Studying real fear and horror may not be as whimsical and fun as the playtime kind, but it certainly is no less enriching, and it carries a lot of practical benefit. It can be a scary world out there, after all, and anything that can help us deal with that constructively is a worthwhile read. An excellent book, one I recently read and recommend to absolutely everyone, is The Gift of Fear by security consultant Gavin DeBecker. One interesting point he made, one I'd never thought of, is the delineation between real fear and what he calls false fear, maladaptive responses like paranoia, anxiety, and worry. Real fear, as DeBecker explains it, is not a state of mind, but a physiological response to an actual experienced stimulus. You feel a hand clap down on your shoulder from behind you and you jump, or you run like hell as the roof over your head starts caving in, or you call for help when someone is chasing you. That's real fear. Every animal has that. Even the big tough ones, like wolves and bears, will move away to a safe position when startled by a man that they're fully capable of taking down. Pure instinct gives us the tool of fear to help us quickly avoid things that can harm us. The false fears are largely created in our own minds in the absence of verifiable threat. People start to convince themselves that threat is all around them, and they're always a half a step away from being attacked. That's a toxic frame of mind, and it will gradually eat away at someone's mental well-being, possibly rendering them blind to the real threat when it presents itself. Fortunately, in the haunt world, our victims know that these irrationally frightened states of mind are just a game in our little theaters, and they're experienced not as soul-destroying anxiety syndromes, but merely a good, fun, scary atmosphere, something the haunt-goer would be disappointed to not feel after waiting in line or even spending money to experience it. Threats come in all sizes and forms, from a virulent, flesh-eating plague to a maniac with a sharpened screwdriver. The big difference between the two is one of scale. The maniac is a specific one-on-one threat, a small story, and the plague is a really, really big story, a scary world of death and horror that surrounds and envelops. And technically, both of them are equally as threatening if you're the one that's about to be killed by one. The devil is in the details, as they say, and the details are what give a book, a movie, or a haunt its own unique flavor and atmosphere. It's up to the artist, or haunter in this case, to decide what the desired atmosphere is that's being attempted. That may seem a little over-analytical, but it's really not. A haunter may have a cool concept for a storyline, but since most of the actual details of the story are going to be lost on the average haunt-goer, the intended flavors of the haunt, panic, creepiness, claustrophobia, horror, whatever, are really more critical factors than the specific story details themselves. So long as the presentation is consistent with how you want people to feel and react, the haunt-goer's experience will be that much stronger, and the haunt will have a much richer, more professional, high-quality feel to it. Since a ravening zombie outbreak and a crazed dwarf with an ice pick can kill you just as dead, one needs to pull back from the main antagonist in a story and ponder the underlying message of the threat. I think one major difference between the really small story and the really big story is this: there's no way out versus there's nowhere to run. A stalker-killer storyline or the haunted house theme carries the undertone of being trapped and needing to escape. There's a monster after me and I have to get away from it and into the light of day. This carries a sense of immediacy, akin to what DeBecker would call real fear. The zombie outbreak, on the other hand, or Gates of Hell or other apocalyptic scenario, feels a little different. There's no hope, nowhere to run to. Anywhere I go will possibly be just as dangerous. This gives us more of that all-encompassing, pervasive anxiety and despair. And the kicker is, one is not necessarily any better or scarier than the other. They just feel a little different. So long as they're properly exploited, a terrifying time can be had by all, no matter what the scale, scope, and breadth of the story. Big story concepts involve big threats, larger-than-life villains, or situations that no one person could ever hope to defeat or defend against. The zombie outbreak, for example, or the gates of hell being opened, or an alien invasion. These things, there's really no coming back from. A sense of unavoidable defeat suits these haunt scenarios well. And between the high-powered boo and chase-type scares, the calmer sections are nicely enriched by anything that suggests hopelessness and despair. One of my favorite horror movies, John Carpenter's The Thing, made brilliant use of its musical score and desolate Antarctic settings to add an underlying despondency and melancholy to the horror intention. Haunters can easily use atmospheric devices like music to extort an emotional effect like that. Plot devices like news from the outside world in the form of radio or TV broadcasts can give an impression of the grand scope of the horror. While budget will restrict the haunter's ability to engineer landscapes, detailed window art that suggests looking out into a destroyed or distorted world is also a nice touch, suggesting we may be trapped in here, but it might be even worse out there. While big concepts, of course, benefit from big props, big sets, and big effects, those without correspondingly big budgets can do a lot for the atmosphere of the big concept haunt by simply making it clear that the horror of what's going on extends well beyond the small setting the audience sees. The small story, on the other hand, will, of course, contain smaller threats, but that doesn't make them any less threatening to the people being menaced. The werewolf, psycho, or vampire may not represent the end of the world, but he'll certainly be the end of yours if he catches you. This is a threat of a more intimate, in-your-face quality. Small-scale scenarios can make much better use of detailed stories of a personal nature, like tales of vengeance and obsession or sadism. The Victorian and Gothic backstory is in its element here, with its tales of family plots, betrayals, curses, and retribution. Action can be played out to give audiences the impression of being caught up in someone else's vendetta, or the bad guy slash creature can simply be in predator mode, stalking and preying on any hapless human that wanders in, which of course includes your guests. The key is that the predator-prey relationship is clearly established, and the villains in the story can play a much more central role with specific identities in the story. And while hope in the big story scenario is pretty much non-existent, that doesn't make the small story any rosier. Trapped is trapped, and if life is just hunky-dory beyond the walls of the cursed house, a victim's fate can seem all the more horrible. Looking through a window and seeing a blasted, burning wasteland is bad, but is it really worse than being imprisoned in a maniac's booby-trapped dungeon of horrors and seeing a sunny day through the barred window with flowers and children playing in the fields? Of course, the grand-scale scenario and the close-up personal conflict story can and often do overlap in the fright world. In one of my favorite low-budget horror flicks, Phantasm, all the action took place between a very small group of characters and one villain with a small group of henchmen. But when it was found that the evil tall man was an alien being, and his band of murderous Jawas and flying sentinel drones were part of a growing army, the story took on a new layer of urgency that suggested mankind itself could ultimately be threatened. The nightmare world of Silent Hill, on the other hand, was an entire world unto itself, but a personal one that would adapt and tailor itself to exploit the guilt, fears, and hidden demons of the specific victim trapped within it. Whether the haunt's backstory setting concerns an isolated threat or part of a colossal global horror, there are underlying messages and suggestions that can be exploited to make the nightmare richer and more satisfying. The epic-scale story presents a changed world that has lost its order and sanity and will never be the same. The more personal story shows life going on in the world as it always has, but the changed victim is lost to it and may never even see it again. Such differences, however subtle, can suggest how certain scenes, details, and atmosphere can be favored for maximum effect. Once again, the haunt-goer is going to be thin on plot details. There's a limited amount of time to absorb a teaser story in the beginning, and that's if they even bother to read the sign or listen to the intro character. And things happen quickly and often under duress in the haunt itself, so the audience may be very lacking in information. The greatest storytelling may well be accomplished with emotions and impressions, and the creator can find it helpful to consider just how big is this thing, how far does it really go, and how bad can it get? You, as writer and director, get to decide. It is, after all, your world. All things vast and ominous, vile creatures great and small, stifling, cruel, and merciless, the haunter rules them all. Keep the ghost light burning. From the theater of the mind, I'm Revenant, and you're listening to Hauntcast.
I'm going now. Heaven help you.
Please like and follow the podcast. Stalk us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Links in the description. And help us by sharing Hauntcast with all your haunt and Halloween brethren. Until next time, stay scary.